Blog Talk Radio.
Good to see you, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I am doing great, doing real good. Made it to Friday, so
we have made it through another
Friday
week.
Show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Or as we say around here, hashtag you're welcome, I believe. Or is it 1-800 you're welcome?
And we're going to try out a new thing to, as part of the show tonight. We're going to do Other Geek, but I think what we'll do is wait until the end of the show to kind of trot that out. But it'll be something
fun
to try.
Back in the fast forward radio days, we had features. Okay, we had features. We had a little game show feature we ran for a while with Michael Darling, where you'd get three top headlines and one of them was made up, and you had to identify which one was made up. That was fun. We had Tales of the Paranormal, which I think we can still bring back anytime we choose to. And we had Astounding Science Facts, which essentially the whole show is, right?
So. Yeah, the whole show is really Astounding Science. So we can kind of drop the Astounding Science, but the Tales of the Paranormal is sort of the roots of the show because, again, we were sort of inspired by, what's the name of that show?
Art Bell, Coast to Coast.
Art Bell.
Absolutely,
we're kind of inspired.
He's the maestro.
He is to us what
Bill O'Reilly was to Stephen Colbert, I think. Right? I mean,
we thought, hey, let's do something like that, but have it based on real stuff, and so try to be as interesting as this made up stuff, and so that's kind of where we came from. So every now and then, when we see something that we would classify as paranormal, but still fun and interesting, we ought to pull out the and dust off the Tales of the Paranormal. But tonight we're going to try something new with
Other
Geek.
Now we're going to try something new.
We'll get that. Yep. So.
And okay, we'll say what it is at the end of the show. I'm just still reeling from what I don't know what you're talking about. Made up stuff. Okay. I don't know where that is. But hey, here's a great almost Tale of the Paranormal theory to begin with: parallel universes theory and evidence. Okay, because we're talking tonight about the great unknown, perplexing cosmic mysteries. We're talking about things that we haven't quite figured out yet, things that make us scratch our heads and go, we don't know everything. And this is a fantastic example, actually. And our friend Cecile Tamura has written a piece over on Facebook. I don't know if she's blogged it elsewhere. It's maybe just on Facebook. We've provided the link, and hopefully it's publicly available. And she has done us all a great service here and just kind of worked through the arguments for and against on parallel universes. And I'll tell you, Stephen, when you read through something like this, the first thing that comes to mind is, well, you know what, there's more ways of looking at this than you might initially think. We tend to think in terms of the quantum branching idea about parallel universes. And sometimes
I'm most familiar with, yeah.
Right, and sometimes we hear about the eternal inflation, that theory leads to it. But she also talks about the just plain flat universe. If the universe goes on forever, and it's infinite, and it's full of infinite stuff. Excuse me just for a minute. Sorry about that. Everything just repeats, right? So there will be parallel universes in the sense that we'll have the same universe occurring over and over, or slightly different versions of them. Essentially, you get the same number of universes and the same variation on them that you would get from quantum branching or from inflation, or even from, I guess, from this idea of mathematical parallel universes where just kind of the laws of math themselves are driving, you know, infinite universes, but they're all just not sort of out there. They're literally out there, right? If you had a spaceship that could go fast enough, which no such spaceship exists, you could actually fly to these other parallel universes. So there's a lot of good solid, well, I don't know about solid, a lot of good ephemeral arguments in favor of parallel universes. And then when she looks at the case against, I think it goes to the fact that, you know, the case for is pretty ephemeral, isn't it? I mean, there's...
Yeah.
You can't point at the other parallel universes, as I just said. Even if they're out there, you can't fly a spaceship to one. We don't have, you know, we haven't hit any holes in space-time where we go to another one where Spock has a goatee and Kirk is evil or, you know, any of those kinds of exciting things that happen in science fiction around parallel universes. But it doesn't mean that we'll never know for sure.
Right.
And we were talking on Wednesday about quantum computers. And one of the interesting implications of quantum computing is that that spooky parallelism that's going on within a quantum computer actually speaks to the same phenomenon discussed in quantum branching, which supposedly maybe gives us parallel universes. So it's possible that without ever pointing to them, without ever seeing them, we might currently be to a very small extent and soon to a much greater extent, making use of parallel universes. Even if we
I think that's why the quantum branching idea of parallel universes is probably the least ephemeral of the various ones that she points out here. Because I believe that, you know, basic quantum entanglement speaks to the likelihood of that sort of parallel universe. It just appeals to me, though, Phil. I mean, just this idea that that every choice that we make creates a new universe, and there's another universe out there where I made a different choice, and different things happen as a result. That's you know, to me, I find that interesting. So,
I do too. Well, I came to my understanding of parallel universes the way most intellectuals of my generation did, and that's through DC Comics. Okay, they were the geniuses of parallel universes back in the 60s and 70s with stories about Earth 1 and Earth 2, and ultimately led to Crisis on Infinite Earths, and things got way out of hand and are still way out of hand at DC where parallel universes were concerned. But it was this great idea of, hey, you know, we've created these new versions of these characters, Flash and Green Lantern, and even slightly modified versions of Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman. What if we had them meet up with the old ones that we used to publish and we stopped publishing? How do we explain, you know, how these different people can exist? And they used parallel universes as the explanation for it. And this is currently in the DC TV shows that are on now, The Flash and Green Arrow. And there was a crossover between Flash and Supergirl a couple weeks ago. That's become a big part of kind of the driving storyline that carries those shows along. Probably we're never going to experience parallel universes that way, sadly enough. You know, the thing is, the Steven who made the other choice, right, is out there. You probably never get to have a conversation with him, sadly.
Yeah, that's that, you know, and so it's sort of like the old country song, you know, we'll never know, right? So
yeah, exactly.
So what would have been, right? So anyway, that's the human condition. So we just we live with our choices, but I find it fascinating that the idea that choices the choices that we make actually produce
spinning
parallel
off whole new
universes.
Because I chose to
use the word supercalifragilisticexpialidocious in this episode. You know, there's a parallel universe that's probably a lot more likely where I didn't use that word.
You did not say that word.
Yeah, and
anti-disestablishmentarianism, or
yeah, there's, and, you know, you didn't, you know, there's many universes where those two words were never a part of the world transformed. So, anyway, that's
or like where lightning struck me just then. I got struck by lightning, and it was
Phil? Phil, what's the matter?
Some freak lightning at his house, and he's in the basement. We don't even know how it happened. But anyway, we die.
Not
we
on a very special fast forward ready. World train.
That's where we never change the name of the show.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. There's a parallel universe where it's still Fast Forward Radio for sure.
Wow,
so
that's awesome. Yeah. Oh man, where Art Bell is like one of our hosts, and he's with us on the show every week. Think about it. It's out there.
Yeah.
Okay, so we could have too much fun with parallel universes, but it is a perplexing cosmic mystery. What's really going on with reality? And we'll come back to that question before we're done. But meanwhile, here's another one, perplexing, cosmic, not quite the breadth of parallel universes, but darned intriguing in its own right. A dozen black holes are mysteriously spewing energy in the same direction. This is one of those where I ain't saying it's aliens, but
it's aliens. Well, you know, that is one explanation. Perhaps there's some reason that some very advanced civilization would want to aim these things in this direction. You know, here's hoping that it's not, you know, these are not a Death Star weapon, right?
Right.
probably more likely there's something about the structure of the universe itself that is arranging these black holes in the way in this particular way. You know, it's almost like a compass or a spinning what am I thinking of? A gyro.
Like a gyroscope? Yeah.
Like a gyroscope, a spinning gyroscope, or maybe a compass of some sort that's aligning these things in this all in this way. I tend to think that there's probably explanations that don't require little green men, but hey, anytime we can bring in aliens, let's do it, because it's that's fun.
Well, okay, but it's one of two things, right? It is either some force acting on these black holes to make them all point in this. I take it back. There's three possibilities here. One is weird coincidence. It could
yeah.
just be happening.
It would be a pretty weird coincidence, but hey,
weird,
you know,
weird coincidence is
weird. Can happen. Weird can happen.
Statistically.
Yeah.
Unlikely that that's what's happening, that they
right.
just all have to point that way. They should be pointing in different directions. But, it could be a weird coincidence. It could be, as you said, there's just some force acting on them that we don't grasp yet, dark matter, dark energy, whatever it is, that's
yeah.
making them all go that way. And the third one is somebody lined them up, right? I mean, those are the three possible explanations. And I'm going with somebody lined them up, all right?
Well, you know, I'm thinking like things like, you know, our solar system more or less is flat, right? I mean, the planets are not all flying around the sun in their own way. They, because they develop from one dust cloud, most of the planets are pretty much, the orbits are pretty much, you know what I'm saying when I say the solar system is flat.
Yeah, they're all on a plane, absolutely, yeah.
They're all on a plane. More or less. I think maybe Uranus and maybe Pluto are a little weird.
It's close enough, yeah. It's close enough.
Yeah, but they're still more or less on the plane. Maybe there's something like that just to the development of these stars that, what we're talking about is something in a much larger sense than a solar system, because a black hole is a star, right? So, but what if, just the development of that stellar nursery that these black holes were a part of long, long ago, they were oriented in the same way. And now we're seeing the end game of the those stars. I don't know.
Could be.
Maybe something like that. Something like that.
It could very well be something along those lines. And eventually, you know, hopefully we'll figure this one out. But for now, it remains a cosmic mystery, probably a very mundane explanation, along the lines of what you just said. You know, it's like they were all pointing the same way anyhow, then they all became black holes, and so they're all still pointing the same way. I mean, you know, that's like not nearly as mysterious as the Guardians of the Universe, to keep it with DC Comics. You know, this is how they're building the Green Lanterns that, the Green Lantern Corps uses, or some interesting explanation like that. But we'll know in time, perhaps. Or perhaps it will remain forever a cosmic mystery, kind of like let's see what we got next. Oh, how about this? When do you know when you're dealing with a human being? This is cool because this is like an up close and personal cosmic mystery, isn't it?
That's right. And you know, what does it take for something to be sentient? You know, I mean, when at what point do we cross the line between, well, it seems, it looks like it's intelligent. It's, you know, it acts like it's intelligent. When do we just say, you know what, it is intelligent? And that Alan Turing, way back, you know, it's been 50 plus years ago, you know, said that, hey, a Turing test, the Turing test, it was named after him eventually. I don't think he ever called it the Turing test. But he said, hey, if we could just have somebody, you know, at a terminal typing, and then and to some other entity, whether it be machine or our person, the first person doesn't know, and when it reaches the point where you can't tell the difference, they will have passed this test, and objectively, that means something, doesn't it? It may not speak to the subjective reality of what's going on within that AI, right? But it objectively, when you can't tell anymore.
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be hard to get to that subjective reality of what's happening inside the AI, but
because the AI, if it's a good AI, it's going to say, hey, you know, I'm thinking right now, you know, whether it's conscious or not, that's hard, it's going to be hard to ever say, you know, because we have a hard time saying what our consciousness is.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the test we use with people anyway, right? I mean, we give each other credit for being conscious because you act persuasively that you are conscious. So, you know, the Turing test is really just applying the same criteria to machines that we have always applied to humans.
Right.
And here we've got...
Let's get to the story itself here. What happened here was this is a class of, a college level, actually graduate level class, Bill, that they weren't just learning anything. This was an AI class, okay?
Okay.
And there was a number of teaching assistants involved that were helping the professor answer questions and aiding the students with their various research and everything. And one of the teaching assistants was named Jill Watson. Now, that last name is important, isn't it? Because IBM's Watson program is well known as the program that beat Jeopardy, right? And it's now, in effect, going to med school so that it can help with diagnosing various diseases, help doctors by way of Watson. Well, Jill Watson is the teaching assistant for AI version, for AI class version of this, and so these AIs are better than the AIs that we often come across in like online answering systems and things like that. Phil, it doesn't speak up. Jill was programmed not to speak up until she was like 97% confident that her answer was responsive to what's being asked.
Right.
And so it's a really good program, and it fooled pretty much the entire class for the entire semester.
How were they interacting with her? Do you know? Was she on a conference call?
All by email.
Oh, it's by email. Okay, even better. Okay, so.
Yeah.
So
very
close to
what Alan Turing had in mind, right?
Sure, absolutely. So the TA is sending out emails when she's 97% sure she knows what's going on. And hey, you know the thing is, if you got a teaching assistant who's 97% sure of what she's talking about, that is the upper echelon of
Well, it's interesting. One of the students was asked about it later, and this student named Jennifer Gavin is her name. She said, in regard to Jill Watson, she said, "Well, Jill Watson was the person. The teaching assistant who would remind us of the due dates and post questions in the middle of the week to spark conversations and get things going. So she had to remind herself that Jill was not a person again.
Was,
even after
was
having
actually
been told.
A piece of software. Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Jill was the person. I mean, the teaching assistant." So, I think that's remarkable. I think and this is going to become something that we hear more and more and more. How, you know, to the point that there comes a point, Phil, in which you know, why even should we bother to figure out whether something is a machine or not? When it reaches the point where it doesn't matter, you know, it does the job as well and as any person does or better, then do we need to, to ask the question, is this a machine or not? Once it reaches that point, maybe it doesn't matter anymore.
I can actually envision a day when occasionally there will be an interaction like this, when someone will say to another person, oh, you're an actual human. You know, the service was so good, I just assumed you were an AI. You know?
Yeah.
No offense. Right?
And
you're just so smart and helpful, I just assumed,
I just assumed you were an AI. Well, okay.
Yeah, no offense.
Yeah.
Right?
And the other person says, "Well, are you an AI?" And I have to check. Yeah, I'm a human too.
Oh yes, so. I'm a human. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a good point. I think that we'll get very used to it because teaching assistants is tip of the iceberg terms of like customer service reps and you know I mean we talk to a lot of robots as it is, but when it becomes completely seamless, when we don't know, but we're just assuming we're dealing with robots, we just won't care that much anymore.
Here's another quote from another student here. This is interesting. Another student here, Peter Bella, says, "Just when I wanted to nominate Jill Watson as the outstanding TA this semester." So, I think that's interesting.
I don't see any reason why you shouldn't still nominate her. I think you should.
Yeah. She was so responsive. I mean, in the middle of the night, I'm emailing her, and she emails me right back. And,
and she really typed fast too. Apparently,
that's right. So
long emails right back. So I think that as far as perplexing cosmic mysteries goes, there's none more perplexing than what we call the hard problem of consciousness. The problem of whether there's anybody actually there outside of our own individual heads. The rest of you could be philosophical zombies, no offense, but as far as I know, that's the case. Now that cosmic mystery is extended to a whole new class of beings that are starting to show up, it will remain a mystery, but we're going to learn a lot along the way in terms of how we interact with machines and how we interact with each other. I think that there's a lot to be learned on both those counts. And both of them kind of, fall into this, our final topic, which is, is anything real? Do we have any real experience or knowledge of reality? And this is a piece that was in The Atlantic, The Case Against Reality. A professor of cognitive science argues that the world is nothing like the one we experience through our senses. And we won't spend too much time on this one, Stephen, just to say he makes a pretty compelling argument that that's the case, that in fact, or at least I found it pretty compelling, that in fact what we're experiencing is so filtered by our senses that we're almost farther from the real world than we should be, right? I mean, it's like
here's my problem with illusions, but they are
illusions nonetheless. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, my problem with that is this: our senses are the result. Our the way we interact with this world. Our five senses, right? The sixth sense is paranormal, right? So our five senses. Developed over millennia because they were useful, right? I mean, if our ability to see photons, with our eyes, were not useful, didn't give us some sort of ability to interact with the world in useful and productive ways, then it never would have developed.
Right.
And so. The fact, I think that we can be pretty confident in our senses, and it's and the reason I think so is because it is, we've been brought to this dance by these senses, right?
Yeah, I think what Hoffman would argue here is that our senses have taught us to respond correctly. They have not taught us reality. They're not there to teach us reality. They're there to keep us alive, right? And the gap.
I think that there are certainly branches of science like physics that you're getting so far beyond what our senses are that that you know our senses don't really speak much to don't really inform us much. You have to find ways of testing that are almost beyond our senses in a way. But it's I don't know. I something about this idea just bothers me a little bit. And does it you feel or is it am I alone in that?
Well, no. I want to think that I'm experiencing reality, but I think the possibility that I'm not and think I am is intriguing. And I don't know. It kind of strikes me as probably true. But you know what? Be that as it may, we're going to leave reality as the ultimate cosmic mystery because we're not going to solve that one tonight. Let's move on to a little something we like to call Other Geek.
Other Geek. All right. Well,
we've spent the last few minutes of our show for other geeky topics. And, Stephen, you got anything for us?
Yeah, I got a couple things. First, I want to convince you, Phil, to load up the kids and go see Marvel Civil War. This week,
it's PG-13. My kids are too young, but
Okay. Well, how old's your oldest kid?
27. She's okay. I can take her.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
the next oldest is 7, and she can't go. So yeah.
Yeah,
big
probably
gap
not.
There.
Well, yeah, it's there are some things that might be a little might be a little much for them, but it's a fascinating movie. Not just in that it's just superhero geeky coolness. But it deals with some topics that are kind of tough to deal with, and you know the Batman versus Superman movie tried to deal with it, but really it was not. I just didn't buy it when they tried it with that movie, but I buy it completely here. I think you know the question of you know should you be free or do we need to be regulated? I think there's arguments to be made on both sides, and I found it compelling both sides of that argument. So, yeah, and it's just a fun movie anyway. Introduction of Spider-Man into this into the Marvel Cinematic Universe is awesome. They just perfectly done, and Ant-Man was a lot of fun, and of course, you know, I'm big Captain America fan. I love that, and always Tony Stark, you know, he's always cool. So, got to go see that. So, anyway, I guess that's the first thing. I hope I've convinced
you. I will go see it this weekend.
Okay, awesome. At some point, on down the road, we ought to do like a spoiler conversation about it, maybe in another geek segment. But we need to let our audience, go see it before we spoil it at all.
Yeah, well, so, I should at least see it before I talk about it probably, but... We'll do a whole Friday of Other Geek, right? Because sometimes we do just full geek shows, so we'll
every now and then we can just talk about maybe towards the end of the summer talk about all the summer movies or something. We ought to do that.
Other geek? You got 30 seconds.
I want to also convince you to start pulling out with the kids some of these board games that have been coming out, Phil. There's been a board game renaissance since the 90s that. You need to investigate with your kids, man. I think you guys would have a great time. My kids and I play all the time is Small World, and we just played that over the weekend. And my youngest just tromped us in Small World. You talk about an awesome feeling for him. He had bragging rights all day, And
I'm sure, yeah. That's awesome.
That's a fun thing where. You have multiple races of fantasy characters like elves and dwarves and all this, and then you attach to it random powers that can do various things, and like merchant elves or forest dwarves and it always you shuffle it, and so every game is different, and it's just fun. That's one I would recommend to you guys to try. Your 7-year-old, I think, probably handle it.
We will check that out.
Hard.
That is definitely some other geek goodness right there, Stephen. I'm gonna check out. It's called Small World.
Small World is the name of that game. Yep.
Go see the movie that you recommended. And with that, we have wrapped up another week. Well, thank you, Stephen, for all the great topics we've discussed this week, and thank you all for being with us. We're going to be back again next week with three brand new shows. And until next time, live to see it.